Catholic Channel, Sirius 159, presents Pathways of Learning, an in-depth look at Catholic education in America. Here's your host, Sister Marie Pappas.
People, Catholics, and non-Catholics are absolutely fascinated by nuns. Nuns have been the subject of modern musicals, comedies, memoirs, operas, and jokes, good jokes and bad jokes. People in their 30s, 40s, 50s, they think of nuns as either Sally Field and her aeronautical wimple, the flying nun, or Julie Andrews, the singing novice in The Sound of Music, perky, joyful, and rather unreal, or Whoopi Goldberg in Sister Act, or The Trouble with Angels. Older people, particularly those who went to parochial school, remember nuns in habits, veils, odd religious names, Sister Stanley Joseph, and rosary beads that clicked along the side. Nuns are just fascinating. They have about them an aura of mystery. At least they used to. We have nuns before Vatican II and nuns after Vatican II. Nuns who live in convents or lived in convents, and nuns who don't. And nuns who taught, who were nurses in hospitals, and nuns who do some really different things today. Nuns who are attorneys or spiritual directors in prisons and run school systems and shelters for abused women, university professors, all sorts of things. So how did it all change? Or has it changed? Today we're going to be talking about a nun's life because it's such a curiosity. But what we want to do is go beyond the stereotype. Joining us in our conversation today is Sister Julie Vieira. She is a member of the Sister Servants of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and I'm sure she's going to be telling us more about her community. She's been a nun for 11 years, and that makes me feel very old because I've been a nun for 35 years. That makes me feel ancient. The reason we wanted to get to know her is that Sister Julie has a personal blog, and it's called A Nun's Life. And to testify to the fact that people really are very, very fascinated with the life of nuns, it gets hundreds of thousands of hits every year. It is www.anunslife.org. Sister Julie, welcome to Pathways of Learning, and thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Marie. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Now, Sister Julie, you were one of our presenters at the Teachers Institute last week, and did you see me sneak into the back of the room?
I did see you sneak in. I was ensconced in teaching.
You were ensconced in teaching. St. Teresa of Avila. You know, I've been mulling over what I heard you say that day. I didn't stay for the whole presentation, and I have to confess to you that I was so exhausted that the minute I sat down, I felt myself fighting sleep, and I said, oh, this is not even polite. But I did. You know, it's so funny because I was not there for the whole presentation, and I heard so clearly what you said despite my tiredness, and I've been talking about it ever since and looking forward to today. Now, I am not at all familiar with blogging, but I did go to your blog site, and I think I found for myself a new addiction. This is wonderful.
It is. Once you get into blogging, it's very hard to pull yourself away.
You know what, though? They keep me so busy here in the Archdiocese of New York as superintendent of schools that they don't give me enough time to play with a blog. But here we are at Sirius Studios, and I've had some time now as we waited for us to come on air. And so I got to explore your blog, and I said to Jackie LaFaro, my producer, gee, I could be here forever. This is just wonderful. You know what I like about it?
What's that?
You know that nowadays we don't have as many nuns as we used to have. I mean, yeah. We used to have loads of nuns. And so I'd like to network with other nuns. And so I'm reading through this and saying, oh, I'd love to respond back to her. But, you know, I have to learn the mechanics because I don't know how to respond back to some of these people.
Oh, it doesn't take too long to learn.
I bet it doesn't. All I need is a little free time.
That's right. That's
either that right. Or are you presenting at our next Teacher Institute this coming
week? I will be.
Oh, then I'm going to stop by and see you, and you can navigate me through that.
Oh, I'd be happy to.
So what do you think people are so fascinated with our life?
Well, I think you named it well when you said, you know, there exists this air of mystery, which, of course, things like The Habit and, you know, a lifestyle that people aren't quite sure of, except that we probably pray a lot and go to church. I think, you know, there are a lot of unknowns for people about our lifestyle.
Well, yeah, many of the sisters don't wear habits anymore. So, I mean, we've taken that shroud away.
Right. And much to some people's dismay that we've done that, because my sense from people who respond to me on my blog is that people really, I don't know if they enjoyed it so much as it was an important symbol for them, either of their faith or of our commitment. I'm not quite sure what, but I find a lot of people, a lot of people are pleased by that, and just as many probably are disheartened by that.
Well, that's the great thing about being part of the Catholic Church is that, you know, so much is possible. There's so many ways of being a religious
right.
and responding to many different people.
Right. And that's one of the main things that I wanted to do with my blog is to say there is such a rich diversity of religious life out there. There's no one single way of being a nun. And in fact, the church and the world are richer because there is such a variety. So I really hope that people, you know, get that message and also begin to see us, you know, as real people, real women who are working hard, who are intelligent, who have to negotiate life just like other people do.
Sister, this is Jackie, the producer. There is an advantage when you don't have a habit on. I am not a nun, a woman religious, but I travel frequently with sister who is in a definite habit. And some of the advantages in New York City is I always get cabs. People always let me on elevators because they're letting her on first. And people tend to be just a little more polite.
Yes.
Well, but Jackie's not telling the whole story because there are other dynamics as well. Another reason why Jackie takes the cab as we come over here to the studio is because if she doesn't and we walk over, everyone in New York City stops to have a chat of one sort or another with me. So there's that dynamic as well. But I think you're on to something when you talk about the wearing of a habit is a symbol. It's saying something louder than anything that I myself could say. I'm speaking something to lots of people, and it definitely causes commentary.
Mm-hmm.
So it has its place. It has its purpose. There's no doubt about it.
So, Marie, when you're out there in New York walking around, are you consciously thinking to yourself, like, I am a nun wearing a habit, and kind of monitoring how people respond to you? Because not having worn a habit myself, I have no idea of what that's like.
Hey, Julie, you should try it sometime just to see for yourself what it's like. But no, I have to say, you know, I told you I've been a nun for 35 years, mm-hmm. so I just go about my life. I'm just being me. And I think people remind me of who I am as they approach me because of the visibility of the habit. But no, I'm not at all. I think maybe when I was young, when I first put the habit on, you know, there's that sense of self-consciousness about, oh, I'm a nun. You know, I think I read in one of your blogs, you were like so amazed when people address you as Sister Julie,
mm-hmm.
you know, like so surprised, oh, gee, I really am. I've done this, and here I am a nun. Well, imagine then the impact of putting on the habit and the veil. And, you know, so early on, when I first became a Sister of the Resurrection, I was, very conscious of the fact that I look like a nun. But over time, no, not at all.
Yeah. I guess I'm still a little bit at the stage where, you know, when I walk into the video store, get my groceries, or I'm flying on, you know, to New York for a presentation, I wonder to myself, would I be doing what I'm doing right now if I were dressed in a habit? You know, how would how I'm acting right now change, or would it change? And how would people be with that?
Well, you have to be in the Sirius Radio studios where there's all sorts of entertainers of every ilk here. And one day I walked in with Sister, who was in a black and white habit, somewhat modified, but most definitely a veil. And I came in with two Sisters of Life who wear long habits to the ground and veils. And one was 5'9", and one was 3'2". And we caused such stir here. Especially when you have Howard Stern across the hall.
Oh, yes. Actually, Howard Stern has pretty much watched me from a distance, but there was that day when he did acknowledge me, which was pretty neat, you know.
Wow, yeah.
But, you know, the kinds of things you talked about, getting on an airplane, I mean, I've done those things, and I've done it in a habit. It's,
yeah.
Well, again, I'm from New York, so anything goes here in New York. A nun in a habit is, it's hardly worth a turn of the head compared to everything else that goes on here in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think nuns and habits are in anything else just fit right into the variety that goes on here.
Mm-hmm. We have sisters on the IHM Sisters of Immaculata in Pennsylvania are related to my IHM sisters in Monroe, Michigan, and the majority of them wear some form of a habit. And I've had the wonderful opportunity to be on committees with them and work with them. And we will go out, you know, to have dinner or something like that. And I think to myself, my God, I'm with nuns. What are people going to think? You know, this fleeting thought goes through my mind that I'm somehow with real nuns again, which is just funny for me because it's like a little bit of my own stereotypes about nuns that I probably had and still have somewheres within me of just trying to negotiate, you know, how I can, you know, authentically be a sister, even though there are these stereotypes that kind of pound in on you at times.
Okay, so what are those? Here you are, a nun with stereotypes. Let me hear some of your stereotypes of nuns.
Well, I suppose, you know, these are ones that I carried earlier on, but probably one of the major ones was that you could only be a teacher or a nurse if you were a nun.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much a stereotype.
Mm-hmm. You know, that you were a very, you know, simple, gentle person, unless, of course, you were an eighth grade teacher.
Well, if you've lived religious life for 10 years, you know that's not true.
Yes, I know that now, yes. I suppose another one was that nuns were somehow closer to God, that they had a direct line to God in a way that I would never have as a ordinary person.
And if you've ever struggled in prayer, and in 10 years I would imagine you have, then you
know
that's not true.
Yeah. Yep. What else? I think, well, I grew up with the Whoopi Goldberg, of course. She was probably the dominant nun image, although I knew that was a caricature. It was more so the way the other nuns were portrayed that seemed more realistic, that they were, you know, had their, you know, little cells in the monastery, and for them to come out into the world was abnormal and something that that didn't happen very often. And so, you know, I didn't know, you know, way back when, the difference between, you know, contemplative lifestyle and religious who are active and all that sort of thing. So it took me a while to kind of overcome those. And I think the biggest thing that did that was to know a real live sister that I could talk to, engage with, get to know her. And she happened to be an IHM. So it obviously really changed my perceptions of nuns and religious life.
So how did you meet the IHM sisters?
I was studying in Toronto. I did my undergraduate degree at St. Mike's in Toronto and decided to do my theology degree there as well, my MA. And I was studying Karl Rahner with Margaret O'Gara. And as I was studying, I was thinking to myself, wow, this stuff is really good stuff about God. And
Wait. You were just like an ordinary person studying theology?
I was an ordinary person.
Now there's a stereotype you just broke.
Yep.
Who thinks that ordinary people study theology?
Well, this is
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that priests and nuns study, right?
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of lay people, actually.
Well, that's just what I mean. Lay people are breaking stereotypes themselves.
It's wonderful. So the teacher for my course, Margaret O'Gara, who is a wonderful married laywoman, said to me, well, you know, of course, you know, you're going to begin to have faith questions, you know, as you're studying this stuff. It's not something that's just an academic endeavor. It's something that, you know, you can kind of bring into your faith life as well. So she recommended that I speak with Margaret Brennan, IHM, who was a spiritual director at Regis College. And I did that. And, you know, it was a way for me to begin to integrate some of the things I was learning intellectually with my faith life. And Margaret had such a profound influence on my life because she was, to me, an ordinary nun. I later found out she was like the head and director of this, that, and the other organization, and was our general superior for two administrations. But to me, she was just this wonderful, delightful woman who was smarter than anything, very articulate, a good writer, funny, enjoyed a drink here and there, could go out to dinner with her, could talk to her about anything. And I thought, wow, if nuns are like even halfway as cool as Margaret is, then that's a pretty amazing life, you know? So it was in knowing her and then getting to know other sisters, and in theology school, there are tons of religious, so I got to know other people and just experience them as people and eventually as friends. So it made a world of difference to me.
So do you come from a Catholic home?
I do. I was born and raised in Rochester, New York.
Mm.
And we had a priest in the family.
You're really Catholic then.
Yes. And then I came along a generation or two later, and
A generation or two later.
I guess it was a generation. Yeah, that would be my uncle.
So, yeah. Can I ask how old you were when you joined your community?
I was 25.
You're what we call a late vocation.
I know. I had been to college and grad school and everything. I'm 35.
And you want to know how old I was when I joined our community?
How old were you?
14.
14.
14 years old, straight from eighth grade.
And they let you do that?
Well, in those days. In those days, they did.
But the Redemptorists call that being a lifer.
Right, exactly. Well, the other thing is, when I joined my community, I didn't join alone. First of all, another girl who graduated from eighth grade with me, both of us joined at the community. Mm-hmm. And there were, my first year in the convent, 19 of us.
Wow.
Yeah, but that was before Vatican II. After Vatican II, everything changed. Mm-hmm. Everything went on its head. Now, of course, you came to religious life after Vatican II, so you may have no notion what I'm talking about when I say before Vatican II.
Oh, was... I do.
Okay, so what's your rendition of before Vatican II?
Well, my sense, at least within religious life, and I'm sure within the church in general, but especially women's religious community, because I think they really took seriously the Vatican's call for renewal. But before that, it seemed that things were a little bit more strict and rigid, that sisters, whether you were founded to be active in the world or founded to be contemplative, all had to take on like a monastic way of life, even if that wasn't what your charism was. So to me, the religious life seemed a little bit more, I don't know, hemmed in, I guess. And then my understanding of Vatican II and afterwards is that when religious were allowed or called to return to the charism of their foundation and to explore what it means to really be a religious in today's world, that it really opened doors for people to try out new ministries, to experiment with how they interacted with the world. So, you know, it seemed to be kind of a topsy-turvy time.
It definitely was.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the juncture at which I joined religious life. As religious communities, especially women, were launching on this period of experimentation.
What was it like for you?
It was, you know, there's something in canon law that refers to religious life as a stable way of life. I'm saying it hasn't been. That just has not been my experience at all. Not at all. So it has been very, very challenging to be a member of a religious community. You know, one of the things that anchored me as a member of my community during such turmoil, we had an activity that was called spiritual reading when I first joined the community. And again, I was in high school at the time, and it came out of that publication, Sisters Today.
Yes.
Oh, good. You're familiar with it, because they keep the publication going. And there was some line in there that was read that said, many, many members are leaving religious life, and the easy thing to do during this time would be for others to walk out. But what we need is for you to stay, not because we have answers, but because we need you to stay and help us find those answers. We can't do it without you. And so I remember that day musing on that reading afterwards and thinking, well, whatever's up ahead, because I was too young really to appreciate the nature of the turmoil that I had stepped into.
Yeah.
I said, whatever's up ahead, I have to remember that. I have to remember that it's important to stay and to help figure it out. And so essentially that's what I did. And many times I had to remind myself of that, that the easy thing, I think that's what hooked me, that it would be easier to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not one for taking the easy way. Mm-hmm. So that's what kind of made me hang in there. So we'll be right back after a break and we'll continue this wonderful conversation.
Hi, I'm Bob Dunning, host of Across the Nation on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159. We come to you at our new time, 2 to 4 on the East Coast, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the West Coast. People ask me, what do you talk about on Across the Nation? We talk about everything across the nation. We talk about politics. We talk about sports. We talk about everything, and we take your calls. That's Across the Nation with me, Bob Dunning, on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159.
Hi, I'm Jay Thomas, and I'm on Sirius Stars 102. People say, well, what's this show about? Well, we interview people, hopefully in a different way. John McCain has been on, Sharon Osbourne, Michael Douglas, and then we shift gears completely, and we'll talk to a guy who has the longest nipple hair, according to the Guinness Book of Records. We also have people that vacation in outer space when they're not running their cleaning service, so it's a plethora of entertainment. If I were not me, I would be tuning in to the Jay Thomas Show, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, Sirius Stars 102, and I'm a schizophrenic.
Weeknights on As You Think with Father Paul Keenan.
Let's go to Nancy in Michigan. Hi, Nancy.
I just want to say I've been listening to the whole conversation.
Yeah.
And I have five children, and I tell them often, you need to do what's right. Sometimes it takes one person to do what's right, and probably a lot of other people feel the same way and will follow in your path.
As You Think with Father Paul Keenan, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159, and thecatholicchannel.org.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern, Gus Lloyd shares real life with you on Seize the Day.
It was phenomenal. I went from listening to a popular celebrity on Sirius to listening to the Catholic Channel and Mass every morning. And, I mean, my day is completely different than it used to be.
Yeah. So, who'd have thunk, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You guys at the Catholic Channel, that's what gets me through my day. And that's where I'm inspired.
Seize the Day with Gus Lloyd. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159.
Raise your hand if you want more Pathways of Learning. Good. Let's get back to the classroom and Sister Marie Pappas on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159.
In 1920, there were 90,000 Catholic nuns in America running 500 hospitals, 6,000 schools and orphanages, schools for the handicapped, homes for the elderly, homes for working girls, and so on and so on and so on. And here we are. In the year 2000, there is less than 80,000 nuns. But two of them are talking with you right now. Me, your host, Sister Marie, and Sister Julie Vera, a nun who has a popular blog called A Nun's Life. And that's what we're talking about, A Nun's Life. The times, they are changing. Or are there? Are there some things that, no matter how much they change, remain the same? Sister Julie, let's continue talking about A Nun's Life. And before we do that, you have posted on your blog a quote from Sister Justina Riley. Is she the foundress of your community?
No, she was just one of our early nuns.
One of your early nuns, a 19th century nun. She is quoted as saying, and this quote is compelling, "Do you think I'm sitting here to pass the time away telling you that religious life is poetry? It's the roughest kind of prose." Mm. And what do you think she meant by that?
Well, I think, I don't know much about her life or the times, but I think that she went through a lot. And for me, what that quote means is that I think we do consider nuns sometimes as just kind of sitting in their prayer corner or in the church pew praying. And maybe there's this romanticized version of what religious life is like, that it's all angels singing in the background and little birds chirping every once in a while. But that religious life, in fact, is the rugged prose. It's It's dirty. It can be messy. It's tough. You have to struggle. And I mean, not that it's all that, but that, you know, it is very much mingled with regular life. I think even women who are contemplative nuns who don't leave their monastery, who are enclosed, still experience humanity at its finest.
Oh, definitely. But, you know, when I read that quote, there is a big part of my life that I think is poetry. I mean, poetry is not all about what is pleasant and smooth.
This is true.
I mean, the thing I like about poetry is that it does touch what is intense and deep and meaningful about life. And I think all human life is about that. And so will a nun's life be about that. But like you said, so much of it is about the ordinary. Mm-hmm. And that is the roughest kind of prose. And so I think she caught on to something there. I kind of like that quote very much. One of the prominent features on your website, that quote of hers. Did you choose that yourself?
I did. It's one of these quotes that I happen to always end up using whenever I'm writing something or speaking about something. It always seems to be appropriate. But it's just a little quote that's embedded in, we've got this really thick history of our congregation, No Greater Service, by Sister Rosalita, one of our nuns. And it's just, I don't even know how I found it in there, but when I hit upon it, and I'm pretty sure it was before I had even entered the community, because, of course, I read everything about religious life in the IHMs before I actually decide to do anything. It just really stuck with me. I have an attraction, I suppose, to the ruggedness of life itself, and have experienced it as such. And so, to me, it was kind of like home.
So, you're saying your life was rugged. Is that what brought you to the study of theology?
Yeah, in a way, it did. I think I had a lot of life questions, and you know, the big ultimate why are we here questions, and trying to figure things out. And I originally got into theology because I was studying Christian anthropology, like who is the human person before God? How do we respond to this God? And so a lot of my work was around that, and I just, you know, still had a lot of answers when I finished undergraduate, and so kept going in grad school.
So do all ordinary men and women ask those great big questions, like what is life all about and what exactly is it to be human?
I think so. I don't know that the exact words or the language is always the same, but I think that all human beings, you know, have this kind of longing for something more, or something maybe they can't quite put their fingers on, and I think we try to fill that up in different ways and answer it in different ways, and some of us, like myself, never really know the answer, but just, you know, embracing the question itself.
I could tell that you studied Karl Rahner. I can hear it in your whole commentary there.
Ah, yes. Karl Rahner is I'm definitely a fan.
Jackie.
Who is Karl Rahner?
Oh.
My God, I'm sitting here going, I don't know who this man is.
You know, Jackie LaFaro, who is the producer of Pathways of Learning, she hates when she puts me together with another nun or a priest or
Catholic
some other.
Catholic speak.
And she tells me we talk a language that the ordinary person doesn't understand. Okay, let's tell her about Karl Rahner. Go ahead.
Oh, Karl Rahner was a wonderful German theologian. He was a Jesuit priest as well. And when was he? He died in, 1984, January, I believe, did like what Thomas Aquinas did for Catholic theology in terms of creating a whole systematic approach to Catholic theology, and it was based on the idea that God is the holy mystery and that God's whole desire for us as human beings is to draw closer, and that God longs to communicate God's self with us. So, I mean, that's the center of his theology, I think, anyways, and his whole approach to the sacraments, to philosophy, to ecclesiology, the Trinity, whatever it may be, is all centered around that.
Well, you know what I got out of my study of Karl Rahner and the way in which I would pass it on then to my students in high school? I taught seniors for 18 years.
Oh, wonderful that you were teaching him Rahner.
Yes, absolutely. And they were very ripe for it. But the whole notion that to be human is to always long for something more.
Yeah.
That we're always longing for the good and then the greater good and the greater good, and that ultimately the, ultimately, that longing that is a part of every human heart leads us, hopefully, to God, and that in every good, it is really God we seek, whether we can name that or not.
Right.
Oh, Julie, Sister Julie, I'm sitting here as a married woman and listening to this and also looking at a quote, which I also pulled off your blog, which says, it's a Franciscan sister for 56 years. Mm-hmm. And she said, each of our relationships with God is unique, but for the most part, it did not grow easier, only more certain. And I ended up thinking of marriage. And I was wondering, you know, when I was in parochial school, we thought, oh my goodness, nuns were the brides of Christ.
And there's a way in which that is very true. I mean, not in the stereotypical sense, but
yeah,
our hearts were made for God. Augustine said it. Our hearts, the human heart, not just the nun's heart. But Julie, why do you think? I mean, there's a lot of activity on your blog, and I definitely intend to spend more time and learn how to become part of that little community you've established there.
Wonderful.
Why do we have so few religious? I mean, you've experienced at least for 10 years, a decade of your life already, how challenging and at the same time how life-giving and purposeful and meaningful it is for you and hopefully for others. I have had that experience as well. Why haven't we been able to communicate this to this generation? I mean, their hearts are just as longing for God as ours.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly ask the tough questions.
Well, that's what happens when you've been a teacher for so many years. And as old as I am, I already told you I've been a nun for 35 years, so I'm at least 155 years old now.
Of course. that is a good question. I mean, I think there are a few things, and this really only comes from my personal experience and not necessarily what all young people think. I think one thing is that, especially for women, there are so many more opportunities that are available now of what they can get into than perhaps were available, you know, before Vatican II. There are a lot of choices, and, you know, as some people say to me, you know, if they ask me what I do as a nun and I tell them, and they say, well, everything you're doing I can do as a single person or as a married person. In fact, you know, I don't even need to be Catholic to be doing those things.
And what do you say?
Well, I say, good point. what is so different about religious life as opposed to any other way of living I could live is the community life. I have been involved in, you know, groups and clubs and all that kind of stuff since I was a kid, and there's nothing like being with a group of women of the same mind and the same heart that come out of the same charism and history, and kind of channeling that energy and that gift from the Spirit into service for the church and world. I don't know how else to put it, but to me, there's just this amazing dynamic that exists in community life.
There is an amazing dynamic. I remember being so fascinated by living with women of every age range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the time I was young and now, I'm sure the younger ones are looking at me as one of the older ones. I don't know. But, you know, I kind of saw myself ahead of myself in their lives and what they did. I think I became a teacher much faster and much better because I lived in community with teachers.
Yeah.
And everything about living in community with other women, the sense of solidarity and the learning curve just goes way up, not just in terms of the kind of book learning, which you can get from a book, so you don't need a community, but for women to be together and to share their wisdom and weave their wisdom together to do great things. It's very energizing, very exciting, very, very, very challenging. It's not always easy. You know about women in the kitchen, you know, too many women in the kitchen. There's a tension dynamic that happens as well.
Sure.
But it's far more energizing than it is anything else.
Yeah, and you throw your lot in, as my mentor Margaret Brennan used to say, you throw your lot in with each other. And you know that you're with each other, you know, whether it costs you your life or your death.
Oh, gee, now you're really getting intense here. Is that what she says, your life or your death? Gee, I wasn't anticipating all of that. What goes on among the IHMs?
These are, you know, conversations when I was a much younger woman. But when I was in my 20s.
Don't you dare say that.
and struggling and trying to figure out what this meant and what's different about religious life. I definitely am a thinker and a ponderer, so I was fortunate enough to have Margaret around me who could kind of handle some of that stuff and meet me with equal intensity.
Mm-hmm. So she was a good match for you.
She was a very good match for me, and I'm pleased that she's still in my life as a friend and a sister. It's wonderful.
So did you choose religious life, or did it find you?
Oh, it found me, for sure. I never wanted to be a nun, never had any Halloween costumes as nuns, none of that, as it were. And it was just that process that I mentioned earlier about growing in my faith and learning more about God and Christianity and theology and all that great stuff, that it occurred to me that this has something to do with my life as well, and that perhaps God is even calling me to do something with my life and to orient my life around God instead of whatever happens to be the next thing for me. And it occurred to me I could do that in three different ways. I could do it as a single woman, a married woman, or as a religious, because, of course, I understood myself to be within the Catholic community. And I knew religious life wasn't for me, but I thought, just to be fair, I would look into it just to say that I did and then cross it off the checklist.
Hey, listen, that's better than most. Most people don't even consider it. You know, it's
right.
Like off the list before it gets on the list.
Right. I mean, I did not want to, but I had a lot of religious around me, so I thought, well, this won't take too long. I'll just, write to a couple communities, ask them for information, and call it good. and what happened was, I kept kind of growing in me, and I kind of enjoyed it and was looking forward to learning more about it. And at the same time, it repelled me. I wanted nothing to do with it because I couldn't see myself in the box that I had created of what a nun should be. And then I had these images of, the nuns around me who were wonderful, decent women. So it was a bit of a tug of war, and I went from saying, please, God, I don't want this to happen, to, please, God, don't take this away.
Wow.
It was just something that had really kind of grown in me kind of day by day. No messages from the heavens or anything like that. But it just grew in me every day until I got to the point where I realized I was becoming so much better of a human being, and I was becoming more Julie Vieira than I had ever been, that I realized that this was where I was supposed to be.
Sister Julie, that is very well said. I think when we find the way in which we're being called to love, whether, as Jackie was saying earlier, to married life or single life or religious mm-hmm. life, we become so much more who we are ourselves,
mm-hmm.
so much better as a human being. And I think most people who fall in love and get married will say that they know it's right because they're so much more themselves. They're so much better a human being. And so they go forward, and that's so true. I resonate with that wholeheartedly. Mm. And I think the hard part for most people is just finding what that is. What is that love that to which I can give the totality of my heart? And our hearts were made for that kind of totality.
Yeah.
I need something big enough to wrap my heart around, something great enough to give myself to, that will encompass the whole of my heart and finding it. I don't know that it was so hard for me. Again, when you're 14 years old, you're starry-eyed and idealistic. But if I were to talk about my way, my way was attraction. I remember sitting in fourth grade class, Sister Marie Celine, Dominican sister, and I remember saying that I could do that. I could see myself doing that. And really what was the clincher? Sister Marie Celine, she did wear the long habit then, back then, and she would pass out the papers to us, test papers or whatever she was passing out, and she would lick her thumb and then pass out the paper, you have that way. And I remember as a kid saying to myself, someday I'm going to lick my thumb like that. And it was just that whole sense, if I had to analyze myself now, I just wanted to be a leader. She was a leader, and she was so amazingly creative and so alive. I wanted to be what she was. Yeah. And in my day, we're talking 155 years ago, there weren't many options for leadership. And so that licking of the thumb and passing out papers, that was like the hallmark of, I want to lead. I want to do something like that with my life. And Here I Am, and we will be right back after our break.
Hi there, I'm Barbara Walters. And as some of you may know, I'm doing a live show every Monday here, and I'm having so much fun doing it. I get to talk to you and even have the big celebrity drop by. My dear friend Suntan George Hamilton was just here. Liz Smith was on last week, so join me, and we'll talk about the most fascinating newsmakers of the day. Barbara Walters Live, Monday at 6 p.m. East, 3 West, on the Sirius Stars channel, Sirius 102.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern, Gus Lloyd shares real life with you on Seize the Day.
It was phenomenal. I went from listening to a popular celebrity on Sirius to listening to the Catholic Channel and Mass every morning. And, I mean, my day is completely different than it used to be.
Yeah. So, who'd have thunk, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You guys at the Catholic Channel, that's what gets me through my day. And that's where I'm inspired.
Seize the Day with Gus Lloyd. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159.
Weeknights on As You Think with Father Paul Keenan.
Let's go to Nancy in Michigan. Hi, Nancy.
I just want to say I've been listening to the whole conversation.
Yeah.
And I have 5 children, and I tell them often, you need to do what's right. Sometimes it takes one person to do what's right, and probably a lot of other people feel the same way and will follow in your path.
As You Think with Father Paul Keenan, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159, and thecatholicchannel.org.
Hi, I'm Bob Dunning, host of Across the Nation on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159. We come to you at our new time, 2 to 4 on the East Coast, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the West Coast. People ask me, what do you talk about on Across the Nation? We talk about everything across the nation. We talk about politics. We talk about sports. We talk about everything, and we take your calls. That's Across the Nation with me, Bob Dunning, on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159.
Raise your hand if you want more Pathways of Learning. Good. Let's get back to the classroom and Sister Marie Pappas on the Catholic Channel, Sirius 159.
Where do you think the United States would be without this whole history of Catholic nuns? I mean, it might seem like pretty outrageous or presumptuous, but like nuns, pre-Vatican II nuns played a key role in shaping American identity, American history, particularly in education. I mean, they have shaped our country. And now nuns are playing such a key role in what we would call social service.
Mm-hmm.
So really, what would our country be like as we go forward without prayer-saturated, energetic, zealous, creative women who come together in the name of the gospel to make a difference and to give their heart in a radical way to God and to his people? What will our country be like without women who dare to do the sort of thing that we're doing differently, their way, but no less wholeheartedly?
Yeah. I think we would definitely be poorer for it. You know, there are certainly many things that you know, we're doing that, you know, people who aren't religious can be doing and not Catholic and not Christian. But I think what we always bring to bear upon whatever we do is that spiritual dimension, that place that says, you know, we're doing this for a bigger reason, or that says to us, you know, we're all connected to one another, whatever we're doing. And it would be a terrible shame, I think, if that were lost in this country.
Yes, because the married woman, certainly, I would hope, would also be a prayerful woman. For the most part, this would be true of a Christian woman. But the totality of her heart cannot be given to prayer and to the gospel way of life and to service, because she has given her heart to her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And together they have given them their hearts, their lives to the welfare of their children and the extended family. I mean, the in-laws, and that is who we commit ourselves to love when we marry.
Yeah.
But there is, you know, Jackie LaFaro was so fascinated by this whole notion that stereotypically you think of nuns as, you know, going behind the walls and kind of locking themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
But really, she said in her reading and preparation for the program, she was so fascinated to learn that our way of life is really a way of great freedom.
Yeah. What happened, I was reading this book, Spirited Lives, how American nuns molded American culture. And the authoresses, two of them, make the point that during medieval times, if a woman went into the convent, she ended up in some ways being more free than if she stayed out of the convent, that if she remained single, she would be controlled by her father, that if she married, she would be controlled by her husband and her property would be owned by her husband, and she would be in physical danger because childbearing and child rearing were extremely different and highly prone to infection. So I started to think about that there was a freedom for those women, and they became very creative. They became musicians, physicians, quote-unquote, et cetera. And that, what is the freedom that exists for women religious today?
Well, I look at my own life and the opportunities I've had as a member of a religious community, my studies, the extent of my studies, my traveling, none of this would be possible apart from religious life. Mm-hmm. There's a largeness that happens when you become part of something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Julie, I know you're a baby nun, 10 years old. But I'm sure your life has become larger by being a member of a religious community.
Oh, very much so. And early on, my little quote was, join the convent, see the world. Part of it was because I was living in Toronto, and then I was living in Washington, D.C. as a candidate or a postulant for the community, and was traveling a lot and had opportunities to go to workshops and, you know, do intercongregational formation events. So even just at that level, I was being thrown in with people from all over the world with different ideas, men and women religious. It was wonderful, but, you know, also a lot of traveling, just by nature of what I was doing at the time. And and having sisters all over the place. We've got sisters in my congregation everywhere, even though we're in Monroe. But to have their experience, even though I might not ever get to Africa, to have that experience that they have opens my eyes and helps me to grow that much more.
But am I right, Sister Julie, that neither one of us consecrated ourselves as religious women in order to travel more, that the inclination to give ourselves, to consecrate ourselves, came from some interiority coupled with, of course, our associations. And then all of that came later. It's kind of like married people, too, when they marry.
Yeah.
They marry in relationship to a person to whom they give themselves. And then everything else comes later as part of the unfolding of that first love. And
right.
At least that's how I experience my life. Yes, my life has become larger and deeper and so amazing. I've been stretched in ways I could never even imagine.
Amen to that.
But, I mean, it's not what made me do this. It's just become part of the flow of this consecrated way of life.
Yeah, I think if I had known some of the ways I was going to be stretched and things I would do before I joined religious life, I'm not sure I would have done it.
Well, and I think most married couples will say the same thing. If they had known what married life and family life would demand of them, they'd run the other way. But how good of God that he keeps us blind to those things and
right.
helps us to only see that which is attractive and life-giving that draws us to dare to make that leap into the love that is ours.
And I think, you know, that stuff is, it's not that it's all what, you know, what happens in religious life, the traveling, the challenges, all that great stuff, or in a marriage. It's not so much that it's bad, it's just that we can't imagine ourselves doing that, and so therefore it becomes an impossibility.
That's right, because we haven't grown there yet.
Yeah, and so, I am amazed, you know, and that was one of the things early on in my discernment that kind of helped me to realize this is a good place for me to be, because it was like so many things are opening up in my life. And, you know, on the one hand, I had my family wondering, you know, is she being brainwashed? Is she going to, you know, kind of be put in a little box and become not the Julie that we know?
Oh, and did they fear those things?
Hmm?
They fear. It fascinates me in this day and age that parents still fear that when they see that religious life has changed.
Yeah, but I don't know that people really have a sense that it's changed. I don't think they know. They know that there are not as many nuns, and they know that there are some crazy nuns who don't wear habits. But
and there are some crazy ones who do.
And there's certainly that. So I had that on the one hand. On the other hand, I was feeling more free than I'd ever been. You know, I wasn't thrilled with the ideas of, like, obedience, poverty, or celibacy. Those weren't things that I thought, hey, let's run out and be celibate. But they were things that, as I grew into them and understood them and experienced them together in the life, religious life, they were freeing for me. They were, you know, and that's what I hope that, you know, people will begin to realize about religious life, that far, far from drawing a box around yourself, that it is one of the most expansive ways of living that I know of.
Absolutely. You are so right. And as one who has been vowed in religious life for 35 years, speaking to one who's been vowed for 10 years, mm-hmm. you know, poverty and chastity and I don't know if the members of my community are listening, but even obedience, I'm going to say. All of it, the whole package, all of it is about freedom, but finding our way into that freedom. And just to be free from the need to have more than what I need for now, for this moment. I love my life. I would say to my students, I still say when I give the workshops to teachers, you know, if I had to live my whole life all over again, I would do exactly what I've done. Exactly what I've done, because everything you're saying is so true. And I love to hear it out of the mouth of one who's young in religious life. 10 years is young in religious life. You are so right. So it's very, very true. But you can't know it until you dare to give yourself.
Well, and I was fortunate to have people, you know, who were like you, who were like my mentors, people who did love the life and who wanted to share that with me and who drew me into it. So, you know, I think the younger religious and people are thinking about it. I mean, we only go where we go because we've got people like you that were behind us and are continuing to forge ahead.
So, Sister Julie, tell me something. You know, I'm looking at the list of all these different sisters on your blog there. Are the Sisters of the Resurrection going to get a space now that we know each other?
I think so. Now that we know each other, I think that you've earned a spot.
You know what? Let me tell you this, too. And I am going to learn how to interact on your blog because I just am so drawn to it. And I want to interact with other religious in our times as we face this challenge together. But I will be leaving next week, the 25th of October, to go to Rome. Wonderful. Because the founder, we're the only community in the Universal Church founded by a mother and her daughter together. Mm-hmm. We were founded in 1891. And Celine, the mother, is being beatified.
Oh, wow.
But I love the story about the miracle that made her worthy of beatification. Mm-hmm. Her great-great-great-grandson, Andrew, was wall climbing, to talk about modern times, mm-hmm. and he fell on his head. And he was so severely brain damaged that the doctor said he would either die or he would be a human vegetable. So because the family's related to the community, they called the sisters, who in turn called the universal community, and we began a 9-day novena, and he awoke perfectly healthy.
Wow.
He is now 23 years old, and he will be present for the beatification on October 27th.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's a great celebration. There'll be about 300 to 400 Sisters of the Resurrection present in Rome. Of course, everyone cannot attend, but those of us who are able will be there. And so that's another reason why I want to learn to navigate on your blog and interact, because I would love to share with everyone mm-hmm. what this great celebration is about on the 27th.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just happy today to have had the opportunity to get to know you. And the funniest thing is we really don't know each other. I snuck in the back of your classroom the other day, but I feel like I've known you for so long.
You know, I have a similar feeling. It's just been like I've been sitting down with one of my nuns chatting over a cup of coffee. So it has been a delight to get to know you and have a chance just to talk about, you know, some pretty amazing stuff.
It is, and there's more to share. And so I think periodically we're going to have to bring you back on and see where we're at and see if we can get some other sisters to join us in this great conversation.
That would be
great.
Get
real variety going here. Mm-hmm. So, Sister Julie, thanks so much for being part of Pathways of Learning. And we have learned.
Thanks a lot, Marie.
Thank you. Now, next week, as I said, I will be in Rome, and that means that Dr. Jackie LaFaro, my producer, is going to become your host on Pathways of Learning.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, what she puts me through now, she's going to get a taste of it. But actually, it's all about fun, so I hope she has a lot of fun. I hope you're all good to her. And if I can pull it off, I'm going to try to make a phone call from Rome to let you know what's going on with the beatification of Celine Lijinska-Bojanska, who will be Blessed Celine Lijinska-Bojanska. And so I hope you will be with me in spirit, and I will try to be with you on air next week. Be good to Jackie. She's going to be talking about the whole process of canonization.
So, and believe me, it's a very difficult process for me to understand. Well, I'll miss you.
And Jackie is not into all this theology like Sister Julie and I are, so she's going to be doing some homework in preparation for this. And I can't wait to share with you the joy and the excitement of this amazing happening as our foundress, at least the mother of the mother and daughter pair, is pronounced blessed at St. John Lateran in Rome. So, and then we're going to take advantage of this opportunity and spend some time touring Rome, going to Assisi, and I'll at least take you in my heart since I can't really let you carry my bags there. How's that? And until we meet again, may God hold you and all those you love in his embrace. Arrivederci.
Listening to the Catholic Channel on Sirius 159.